Welcome to Baby Tour Guide's Montessori Babies podcast. I'm your host and baby tour guide, Bianca Solorsino, and for the last decade, I have dedicated myself to helping parents, educators, and caregivers optimize baby development through a Montessori lens. This podcast is all about evolving our Montessori practice to make our time with our sweet babies easier, relaxed, and so much fun. Let's jump into it. Hey guys, welcome to season 2, episode 15 of our Montessori Babies show. This week is so special because we get to dive into the world of baby-led weaning and its relationship to Montessori, and all through an incredible interview that I had with the amazing Katie Ferraro of the Baby-Led Wean team. So, because you guys are in the baby world, you probably have heard of her or her podcast, Baby-Led Weaning Made Easy. But if you haven't heard of her, she is a registered dietitian specializing in baby-led weaning, and she's a mom of 7. So she teaches nutrition at San Diego State University and hosts the top-rated parenting podcast, Baby-Led Weaning Made Easy. She runs the largest digital community dedicated to baby-led weaning, and she helps parents, caregivers, and healthcare providers give their babies a safe start to solid foods using baby-led weaning. So she and I had just the most incredible conversation, and before I jump into it, I wanted to just quickly say our quote for the week. So our quote is by Jill Rapley, and she is the lady who originated the theory of baby-led weaning. So I thought, what better way to kick off our episode about baby-led weaning than to read one of her amazing quotes. So she said, "A baby's motivation to put food in his mouth is curiosity and copying, not hunger. For the first couple of months or so, solid food is all about learning." And I think for obvious reasons, this quote was just so perfect to kick off this episode. But, you know, I guess I just kind of wanted to point out for this quote that curiosity and copying piece is a lot of what, you know, Dr. Montessori discussed as far as that inner will to learn, right? So it's kind of labeled as different things in different worlds, but it's always there. And it's that just innate drive to try and to learn and to do what they see. And that is it. So anyway, we are going to go ahead and jump into this interview. I'm so excited for you guys to hear all of this incredible information about baby-led weaning and Montessori. So let's get into it. Thank you so much, Katie, for coming on our show. I am so excited to have you. So can you tell us a little bit of your history to begin so we can get to know you a little bit?
Yes, of course. And thank you so much for having me. I think there's so much overlap between baby-led weaning and the Montessori approach. I'm really excited to chat about this. I'm a registered dietitian. I specialize in infant feeding and baby-led weaning, which is an alternative to conventional adult-led spoon feeding. I've been a dietitian for almost 25 years at this point, and specializing in infant feeding for about the last 7. And when I had my first child, I struggled a lot with spoon feeding, as a lot of parents do. I just kind of listened to what my doctor said, and I started rice cereal at 4 months of age, and she didn't like it. And it felt weird because I was like forcing it on her. And very quickly, our mealtimes kind of just evolved into this downright battleground. And I felt like my daughter hated food. I felt like she hated me. And I just felt like this abject failure as a parent. Because like, what kind of parent can't feed their own child? And then what kind of dietitian parent at that? So fast forward, like at the height of our feeding frustration, my husband and I found out that I was pregnant with quadruplets. So we had been doing fertility treatment. The potential for multiples is always there, but I was definitely not expecting 4 babies. And I remember the first time I saw the ultrasound with all 4 of them, I was like, how am I going to feed 4 babies at once when I can't even feed the 1 baby that I have at home right now? So fast forward from there, our quads were born actually at 34 weeks, and I gave birth to 3 boys and a girl, and they spent time in the NICU for the first part of their lives, as premature babies do. And friends would come and they were helping us feed. And I was just like kind of lamenting like how terrible spoon feeding was going at home with our oldest. And my colleague, who is a dietitian, said, you know, well, why don't you try this thing called baby-led weaning? And I was like, baby linguine? What are you talking about? Said, no, baby. Led weaning. It's this approach whereby you wait until your babies are 6 months of age, where they start feeding themselves the safe, wholesome foods that their parents and caregivers provide. And there's no picky eating and there's no mealtime battles, and they end up liking lots of different foods. And I was like, oh my gosh, this sounds too good to be true. So I'm a college nutrition professor by trade. And I kind of threw myself into, you know, really kind of harassing my feeding colleagues in the infant space. Like, what is this deal with baby-led weaning? Is it real? Is there research? And what I came to find out is that there is a real incredible body of research that supports this baby-led approach. approach to infant feeding as opposed to force feeding by spoon as a safe and effective alternative. So when the quads were 6 months adjusted age, we kind of jumped whole hog into baby led weaning. A lot of trial and error at that time. There were really no good resources on how to do this approach. So I kind of had to figure everything out on my own. But honestly, the foray into foods with the quadruplets was such a more positive experience than we had had with our oldest that it actually inspired me to kind of shift the entire focus of my career and just emphasize and work on the baby-led weaning space because it was so transformative for our family. And what I had realized is with this approach that before they even turned one, our quadruplets had tried 100 different foods. And so this idea of the 100 first foods approach to baby-led weaning was kind of born. And since then we had one more set of multiples. We had a set of twins when the quads were 18 months. So there was a period there where we had 7 kids age 3 and under. It was a little overwhelming to say the least. I felt like I was running my own school. I wish I knew more about Montessori back then, to be honest. But I refined the 100 First Foods approach with the twins, turned it into a digital program. We've now used this approach through our business, Baby Led Weaning with Katie Ferraro, to help tens of thousands of families give their babies a safe start to solid foods. And this idea of like 100 foods is really kind of taken off as a global phenomenon because babies can eat so many more foods than we give them credit for. So I spend all day teaching and writing and sharing content, a podcast, YouTube channel, you know, the whole nine, just showing families how to make these 100 foods safe for their babies to eat.
Well, that's amazing. This avenue is just so, so needed. I've gotten glimpses of it, you know, in the Montessori classroom, and literally the baby-led approach, having the child lead it, is just magic. So your work is just wonderful.
Thank you.
So we have a lot of, you know, expectant and new parents in our community. So would you mind just fully explaining what baby-led weaning is?
Absolutely. So baby-led weaning is an alternative to conventional adult-led spoon feeding. So babies learn to feed themselves wholesome, safe foods that are offered by their parents and their caregivers. And what I love about the baby-led weaning approach is that it's a responsive feeding method. So it supports your baby's inborn ability and their desire to be an active participant in this transition to solid foods. And so the term baby-led weaning as a parenting philosophy has really only been around since 2008. It was coined by Jill Rapley. She's a British health visitor. She's a PhD. She's the co-author of the original baby-led weaning book. And Rapley really advocated for waiting until babies are 6 months of age and when demonstrating the other reliable signs of readiness to eat before starting solid foods. And this was in stark contrast to earlier practices that advocated starting solid foods around or sometimes even before 4 months of age. And so what happened was in 2003, the World Health Organization, they changed their infant feeding recommendations to say start solid foods at 6 months of age instead of 4 months. And, you know, compared to 4 or 5 month old babies, 6 month old babies, they can sit on their own, they can safely swallow foods other than infant milk, and they're so much more engaged and active participates in the feeding process, which thereby eliminates the need for us as the adult to force feed or spoon feed them.
Right. Which perfectly aligns with Montessori, right? Because it ends up in that child-led space. One of the things, you know, in respect to baby-led weaning that I love is that it just seems like there's endless benefits to it. So can you please dive into those?
And that's a wonderful question because parents are like, does it work? Well, yes, we have a real incredible body of evidence that supports this as a safe and viable alternative to that conventional spoon feeding. And, you know, different cultures and ethnic groups around the world have historically offered, and they continue to offer their babies modified versions of the same foods that the rest of the family eats right now. Right. If you contrast that with commercial baby food, that's a largely Western construct. It's an invention that's really only been available and marketed since the earlier part of the 20th century. I always tell parents, like, what do you think cave mama fed cave baby? Like back in the day before there was an entire aisle of baby junk food in pouches at Target to buy. Like parents fed babies modified versions of the same foods they ate. And with the baby-led weaning approach, the overlap and alignment with Montessori comes in. The focus is really not on like how much the baby is eating. And sometimes we as parents get so spun up and hung up on that. It's about allowing the baby to learn how to eat. And so the benefits include things such as there's increased feeding autonomy. And the baby has immediate participation in family meals from their first bites. We see reduced risk of selective or what some people call picky eating later on in toddlerhood. And if you think about that, you know, your conventionally spoon-fed baby might only have 10 or 15 foods that they've tried by the time they turn one. And we know that all toddlers are going to experience some degree of food neophobia or picky eating as they move into that second year of life. And if you have a picky eater toddler and they only have 10 or 15 foods that they've ever eaten and you lose those 10 or 15 foods to picky eating, that becomes a very challenging child to feed. But if your baby's eaten, let's say, 100 foods by the time they turn one, and then you lose 10 or 15 of those foods to picky eating, it's really not a big deal because you still have 85 or 90 foods. So there's nothing that can prevent picky eating, but this is the approach that helps reduce the risk of it. And also, we see another benefit with this approach for the decreased risk of food allergies. And that's due to earlier exposure of the potentially allergenic foods. So we have all of the allergenic foods in our program, and we really encourage parents. This is based on research and updated guidelines that show us that early introduction of those allergenic foods can help reduce food allergy risk down the road. So with the whole baby-led weaning approach, your baby's learning to recognize and respond to their inborn hunger and satiety cues.
It's incredible. What you said about what parents have done, you know, since the beginning of time as far as feeding their babies, it's so fascinating that you can observe, you know, cultures today that will, you know, just modify the food that they have. And honestly, it's more economical, right?
Like, oh, we always say it saves you time, money, and sanity. I mean, there's no short order cooking. Anyone with a picky child or a selective eater knows this idea of having to make multiple meals for different people in the family. That all goes away with baby-led weaning. Right. It's much more affordable, right? We have families paying $3 or $4 per pouch, sometimes 3 pouches a day. Mm-hmm. And that's not even nutritionally complete. They're not developmentally appropriate. They don't have the proper nutrition for babies. And they're not complete nutrition. And yet parents are spending so much money on these highly packaged and processed junk foods, many of which have added sugars and added salts, or they're just kind of glorified versions of applesauce. You know, it might be colored green and they call it kale. But really, we're focusing on all of the foods that your baby can eat, real foods that will help your baby develop a lifelong healthy relationship with food. And you don't have to buy the baby junk foods and the pouches, and you don't have to make separate meals. So it saves you time and money and sanity for sure.
It's so wonderful. So I have a background in child development as well as in Montessori. And one of the things that we also studied was the benefits of the family meal and everybody eating, you know, the same thing together, and how that can also reduce picky eating. And, you know, and so it's just incredible that the approach that you're teaching and the perspective and the avenue that you take is, you know, supporting the development side as well. So I think that's just so wonderful. Can you dive into, you know, a little bit more of your 100 first foods approach?
Yes. So I think sometimes as a dietitian, you kind of get this rap as like the bad rap as the food police, and but dietitians just walk around and tell people what they can't eat. And so I feel like in every avenue of my career, I've always really tried to focus on all the foods that you can eat, right? If you're diagnosed with diabetes, instead of thinking what you can't eat, what are the other foods that might now be more attractive to you from a health necessity standpoint? And when it comes to your baby, if you look at all the foods that are out there, we can make almost all foods safe for babies, but not all foods in all forms are safe for babies. And I'll give you the perfect example, which is apples. So if you look at the data on non-fatal pediatric emergency department admissions for pediatric choking, so these are kids who go to the ER because they're choking, but they didn't die. And you look at the list of foods that are on that list, hard candies are up there, and gum, and you know, the things that obviously you're not feeding to babies. I do want to point out sometimes babies do choke on those foods. It's not because the parents are offering it to them, but perhaps another child in the house is offering that to the baby, or the baby finds it when they're crawling around on the ground. But like apples are really high on that list. You're like, oh my gosh, apples. But anyone with a toddler knows like apples are a pretty hard food for them to eat. And so people will say, oh, Katie, well, my baby can't have apples. And that's certainly not true. We don't feed any raw, crunchy or crispy hard pieces of apple to baby, but you can very easily make. We have a recipe in our program. It's one of the most favorite starter foods because it's so easy to do. It's cinnamon baked apples or cinnamon poached apples. And we're basically going to peel the apple, core the apple, slice the apple, and then you cook it in a little bit of water until it's fork tender. So 5, 6, 7 minutes. And then you cut the apple into strips about the size of your adult pinky finger. This is nice, soft pieces of fruit that are going to pass what we call the squish test. So if you pinch that soft apple between your forefinger and your thumb, there should be a little bit of give. And your baby, even without teeth, they can pick that food up and feed it to themselves. We don't cut up the foods very small early on in self-feeding. And sometimes that's kind of counterintuitive to parents. They're like, wait a minute, I thought small pieces are safer, but they're not. Your early eater, as you know, with your child development background, Bianca, they don't have their pincer grasp. So they can't pick up small pieces of food. And even if they could, those very small pieces are the exact size of food that could potentially occlude their airway. So with the longer pieces of food for baby-led weaning, they're generally about the size of an adult pinky finger. Your baby uses their whole hand or their palm or grasp. They can rake and scoop that food up and into their mouth. And so in that way, you're opening up this whole world. Gosh, I don't need to open a jar of applesauce and shove it in my baby's mouth with a spoon, because at 6 months of age, when my baby is sitting relatively on their own and showing me the other reliable signs of readiness to eat, they can pick a food up like apple and put it in their mouth. So for the 100 First Foods approach, I teach a five-step feeding framework, and we introduce five new foods per week. And so the 100 First Foods list is divided into five categories. There's a fruit category, vegetable, starchy foods, proteins, and the allergenic foods. So we do a new fruit on Monday, a new vegetable on Tuesday, a new starchy food on Wednesday, protein food on Thursday, and an allergenic food on Friday. And in that way, you're introducing your baby to five new foods each week. That's 20 foods a month. And in 5 months, your baby's eaten 100 foods. And so we really celebrate this idea of all the foods, the family foods, the cultural foods, the high iron foods, the different textured foods, the allergenic foods that babies can eat. And as you rotate them through this framework and the 100 First Foods list, your baby is achieving all that different nutrition, all those different textures, exposure to all those flavors, plus those allergenic foods. And parents gain this just immense body of confidence in their ability to provide and nourish for their baby. Because the cool part is you don't have to do anything after you prep the food. The baby is the one who feeds themselves. And we take a lot of the pressure off the parent's shoulders, those who feel like, oh, my baby's not eating or they're not getting enough. And we remind them that, you know, that's not your job. It's not your job to make your baby eat, but we'll show you how to get the food out there and in what order to introduce it so that your baby can feed themselves. And then they're doing all the heavy lifting and you can sit back and enjoy, you know, having a meal with your child and also raising a child who actually likes all this wholesome food that you're preparing for them.
So I absolutely think that this approach just sounds incredible. I am, you know, I have an 11-month-old myself. We did take the baby-led weaning approach from what I know about baby-led weaning. You know, I had a little bit of exposure in the classroom. Your approach just sounds incredible. I know you mentioned about, you know, one of your most favorite recipes about the apple cinnamon, the poached apples with the cinnamon. One of the common questions that I got when I was in the classroom was regarding spices and food. Can you touch on that a little bit?
For certain. So babies don't need to eat bland foods. And we oftentimes remind parents, like, listen, you know, I hate to break it to you, but your baby's already been exposed to tons of flavor compounds. When you were pregnant, the foods that you ate, those flavor compounds traveled through your amniotic fluid and your baby was exposed to flavors that way. And then when you're breastfeeding, the foods and the flavor compounds in the foods transmit through your breast milk. And babies, with the exception of a couple of things, we just don't offer any added sugars. So no added sugars for babies until age two. That's the American Academy of Pediatrics recommendation. But most feeding experts and credentialed feeding professionals like myself would agree. No added sugars for babies. And then we don't want excessive amounts of sodium. We want the baby to learn how to be tasting the flavors of the foods, not having high salt, which tend to be less nutritious foods. So we really watch out for sodium. We don't do any added sugar. And then we just stay away from anything that's really super spicy that could be injurious to the baby's health. But if you think about it, you know, babies in Ethiopia eat Ethiopian foods. Babies in Nepal eat Nepalese foods. And so whatever seasonings and spices that you're including in the family foods that you make at home, if you can keep the salt low, no added sugar, and make sure it's not going to burn your baby's mouth up, you should definitely go for it.
I love that. I love that. And that was one of the most common questions I got when parents, you know, because when I ran my classroom, it was babies ages 3 months to 2 years. And so, you know, they would reach the point of solids and the spices question came up so much. And so thank you so much for that info.
Oh, you're welcome. Wait, more than the gagging and choking questions? Because I feel like that's the question people ask the most, is like, they're so nervous about choking. I feel like by the time they get to the spices part, they're like, they kind of figured it out. I don't know.
Yeah. You know, with the gagging, so I ended up, you know, diving into that info myself. So I was kind of able to provide that. But the spices, I was just kind of like, it just makes sense that they would be able to eat it, but I'm not sure. It's not my avenue, you know? So thank you so much for offering
that
in.
Oh, you're welcome.
You know, another thing that you mentioned was that in your first 100 foods approach, you offer a new food every day. And I know some pediatricians still recommend introducing one food and sitting with that food for even up to 3 days, maybe sometimes 5 days, depending on the pediatrician. Can you touch on that a little bit?
Yes. So the recommendation to wait 3 to 5 days between new foods is not an evidence-based recommendation. There are no published guidelines that say you have to do that. But unfortunately, there still are American Academy of Pediatric guidelines and recently published materials that will say wait a few days between foods. But the problem is there's absolutely no research or data or evidence to support that recommendation. And the reality is the wait period that the pediatricians are recommending, and it's other feeding professionals who are sometimes just recycling old messages that they've heard. And they still teach this in medical school as well. But again, it's not steeped in any science, and they're worried about allergic reactions. But the truth is that if your baby is going to have an allergic reaction to a food, that allergic reaction is going to occur within minutes and up to no more than 2 hours following ingestion. So this notion of waiting 3 to 5 days, it's not like you offer your baby egg and then 2.5 days later, the diaper's weird or they have like a weird rash on their contact rash on their face and you're like, oh my gosh, they're allergic to egg. It doesn't work like that. Right. So the idea of waiting 3 to 5 days between foods is actually very harmful in the sense that it slows our baby's progress down. If you waited 5 days between every new food, you would never, ever master the number of foods and flavors and tastes and textures that babies need in order to achieve a diverse diet. And all the research is pointing towards diversity in diet, that that's where all the benefits come in. And so we want parents, it's perfectly safe to offer multiple new foods a day, provided that they're not the allergenic foods. So we have these big 9 allergenic foods. Those are the 9 foods that account for about 90% of food allergy in North America. And so in our program, we always introduce that new allergenic food on Friday, starting in week 1 of baby-led weaning. Start with any of the big 9 if you want, but if you're not sure where to start, egg, cow's milk, and peanut are the easiest ones. So let's say you're doing egg in week 1 of baby-led weaning. I was just working with a set of triplets here in San Diego, and we did egg in their first week. We did fried egg strips where you break the yolk into the white, because the yolk is where the iron and the good nutrition and the fat lives, but the white is where the protein is. And in the egg white, that's where the potentially allergenic part is. And I want the baby to get all the benefits of that. So you mix it all up, cut your fried egg into strips about the size of your adult pinky finger. The baby picks it up and starts nibbling on it a little bit, sucking it, tasting it, smashing it in their ear. Who cares? It's all part of the sensory experience of learning how to eat. But we do want them to ingest a little bit of that protein in order to get that exposure. And we'll do the egg twice on Friday, and we'll do it twice again on Saturday, and we'll do it twice on Sunday. And over the course of the weekend, the baby's tried egg 5 or 6 times. We don't do any other new foods when introducing the allergenic food, because we do want to observe for any potential allergic reaction. But then that next Monday, we go right back to trying a new fruit. And now we've got egg in our arsenal, along with the other 4 foods you tried that week. And we continue offering that to the baby. Not every day, but we want to do those foods early and often. And all the other, we say the other 91 foods on the 100 first foods list that aren't the allergenic foods, those low risk foods, your baby is not going to have an allergic reaction to them. If you think you need to wait 3 days after introducing your baby to strawberry, it's not based on any science. And actually, we want to go faster. We want at least 1 new food a day, or if you're up for it, multiple new foods a day. And that's what we find with a lot with our Montessori families, especially if they're in a Montessori school setting and the parents are working and they're not able maybe to do the variety of new foods that they want to during the week, then they just double up on the weekend and they'll do 5 or 6 new foods over the course of the weekend. That's perfectly safe. We just don't do multiple allergenic foods for the first time at the same time, right? Because if the baby had a reaction, you would want to know which one it came from. Mm-hmm. But you can put a lot of those lower risk non-allergenic foods in your mix on the weekend and really push your baby's palate, because they can eat so many more foods.
That's one of the reasons that I just love this field in this area. I feel like we continue to learn more and more about our infants, you know, as time goes on and what they're capable of, you know? One of the things that you touched on is as far as the textures, the importance of it within infancy. I definitely made an observation about that in the classroom. I remember I had one child who was on only purees until 12 months old, and they were comfortable to switch into a more textured food. But that child definitely had more of an aversion to any other textured food. Would you mind touching on that a little bit in relation to baby-led weaning as well?
Well, one thing that parents are fearful about a lot is, I'm scared to move my baby past infant milk or purees. And what might be a helpful tidbit and piece of research is that the data shows us that babies who start solids with the baby-led approach are at no higher risk of choking than our conventionally or traditionally spoon-fed babies, provided that the parents and the caregivers are educated about reducing risk, which as an educator, you of course are. And we always encourage parents to take an infant refresher CPR course so that you know what to do in the event that your baby did have a choking risk. But the babies who've had the least experience with finger foods are actually at elevated risk for choking. And one of the worst things we can see, and unfortunately, these are the babies who end up in feeding therapy, are 10, 11, 12 month old babies who've never had anything in their mouth except a puree. And that flavor window, that period where they're exploring and trying and liking all sorts of foods and flavors and tastes and textures, the flavor window is starting to close and they haven't had the appropriate experience. Because starting at around 6 months of age, when your baby is sitting on their own, they can start exploring with these different textured foods. They're not eating very much early on, but that's not the point, right? Babies need lots of time to learn how to eat. And so if you think of the weaning period between 6 months of age and 12 months of age, that's a practice period. Your baby needs to learn how to eat. So we don't stress out early on that your 6 and 7 month old is not eating that much. It doesn't matter. Most of their nutrition is still coming from infant milk, right? Breast milk or formula. But when you start out in the weaning period at 6 months of age, 100% of that baby's nutrition is coming from infant milk. And a mere 6 months later, at the 1 year mark, most of baby's nutrition can be coming from solid food. And just a smidge would then be coming from cow's milk when we transition to cow's milk, or breast milk if you continue to breastfeed. So you've got this 6 month period, and it's kind of a lot to accomplish. Gosh, I'm moving my baby from all nutrition from infant milk to almost all nutrition from food. But they, in that 6 month period, think about it, they've literally doubled their lifespan. They learn so much, but we do have to take advantage of that period. I would encourage parents, we'd never start prior to 6 months of age. Babies are not safe to swallow anything except infant milk prior to that age. Plus, from a nutritional emotional standpoint, they don't need it. But as soon as your baby is around 6 months and showing you those other reliable signs of readiness to eat, start pushing them with 5 new foods a week because they can do it. And then they'll learn how to eat all these foods so that by 12 months of age, they can be getting most of their nutrition from solid food. And I know you had Dawn Winkleman on your podcast, a good friend and feeding colleague of mine, speech language pathologist. We co-teach things together about the importance of pushing babies' palates past purees. And she does a lot of stuff on texture. And as a feeding therapist, one thing that Dawn always reminds us is that a lot of the things that feeding therapists see babies for in feeding therapy were preventable. And a lot of it has to do with babies not having experience and practice with textures beyond purees in that all important weaning period of 6 to 12 months. So even if you're scared to do it, know that it's the best thing for your baby and also trust that your baby can do it. And that's where the Montessori layering comes in, is that, you know, the principles of Montessori that we're promoting independence, that is so important. And that the child has their own freedom to pick up the foods that they want and move the foods around their mouth and, you know, make micro corrections if they're drinking out of the open cup and some of that milk dribbles down the side of their neck. You know, that feels uncomfortable. Well, we don't rush in and correct it because the baby needs to experience that as part of their growth and development.
You sit, you wait, you observe, you just watch the child. Yes. As far as the textures go and just kind of trusting the baby, I feel like your program will give a lot of confidence and peace because I feel like you're nervous as a first-time parent, right? You're nervous watching your baby, you know, try something new, especially as, you know, with the choking and the gagging and the potential allergies and all of that, right? It's nervous, but it's also so exciting. You know, I've always felt like, you know, food is just this really colorful world, right? And so I think that, you know, having the tools and resources will bring a lot of peace to the experience. And therefore, you know, because babies are energy readers, they will feel your confidence and your peace and then feel more confident to explore themselves, right?
I love babies are energy readers. I never thought about it that way. We always tell parents, like, your baby, they're really smart, right? And they can sense when you are stressed out. And we do so much education for parents, even in the period leading up to solid food. So for those who may be listening, even if your baby hasn't hit 6 months and you haven't seen those reliable signs of readiness to eat, it's still a good idea to educate yourself about the principles of baby-led weaning so that you'll know what to expect when you sit down to the table and you won't freak out when your baby starts gagging on food, because you'll realize, gosh, gagging is a natural and necessary part of learning how to eat. Or you won't worry, oh my gosh, they're not getting enough iron yet. Well, no, because they need to learn how to eat those high iron foods. So education is everything, and being prepared for the next phase. I think as long as you're like one little tiny step ahead of your baby, like, you've never done this before, but guess what? They never have either. So just stay a little ahead of them and you'll continue to be their guide.
Yeah, absolutely. I would love, you know, I know you mentioned you had your quadruplets and they were early. My son was also early, and that I actually had to do research on my own as far as when to start and, you know, what that meant for him. He also had reflux. And, you know, would you mind touching on just if your baby's early, when to start?
So if your baby is born prematurely, we don't start solid foods right on their 6 month age. We do it on their 6 month adjusted age or around there, keeping in mind that not all babies are like ready to start right on their first birthday. In fact, most of the babies that we work with in my practice, it's not till 6 months plus 1 week or 6 months plus 2 weeks or even 6 months plus 3 weeks until they're sitting relatively unassisted. And that ability to sit on their own is so important because your baby sitting up relatively unassisted, they're demonstrating that they have the fundamental core strength to facilitate a safe swallow. So sitting is essential. And I'll use the example of my quadruplet. So average gestation for a quadruplet pregnancy is 28 weeks. So a lot of why I actually even moved into the online space with my nutrition consulting practice is because there's a 50% chance of major handicap in a quadruplet pregnancy. So my husband and I were basically preparing ourselves, like, we could have at least two or more, if these babies even make it, you know, severely handicapped children. Mm-hmm. And I ended up going 34 weeks. And that's as long as they would let you go with a quadruplet pregnancy, obviously very, very high risk. But at the 34 week mark, that means my babies were born 6 weeks premature, right? If you consider full term is 40 weeks, although no one's ever gone 40 weeks with quads. Mm-hmm. But like, let's just keep the numbers round. 40 weeks is full term. So if your babies are born at 34 weeks, they're 6 weeks premature. So at the 6 month mark, my babies aren't really 6 months old, right? The calendar says they're 6 months old. They've been outside of me for 6 months. But from a developmental standpoint, they're really only like 4.5 month old babies because they're 6 weeks behind. So I had to wait until they were 6 months plus 6 weeks. That's their 6 month adjusted age. So their chronological age, they were 7.5 months old. And you guys can believe I was getting, you know what, in stereo from everyone around me when the babies turned 6 months. Babies are 6 months. Oh, you need to start feeding them rice cereal. Oh, you need to start feeding them food. And I had struggled so much with spoon feeding my oldest that I really tried hard to block everyone out, keep my head down until those babies were sitting up on their own. And it was closer to the 7.5 month mark. And even then, when we started solid foods at their 7.5 months, so 6 month adjusted age, three of the four kind of took to it. But one of our quadruplets, Henry, he just put his head down on our feeding table and had absolutely no interest in eating for the first 6 weeks. He was there with the babies. I was putting the food out. It's not my job to make him eat. So we were eating around him. He was observing us, watching us, but like really not into it. Mm-hmm. And then 6 weeks into it, it was 9 months at his 7.5 month adjusted age is when he put his head up and started picking up food and eating like the rest of the babies. And so just a gentle reminder that all babies get ready to eat at their own schedule, at their own pace, at their own rate. And something that Montessori parents really get is allowing children to work at their own pace. So I might be preaching to the choir here because I would say most families who aren't familiar with those principles are like, wait, you mean I don't have to shove this arbitrary amount of pureed food down the baby's mouth because it's like I have to meet some sort of nutrition milestone? Like, no, absolutely not. The baby will tell you when they're ready. Now, it's on you as the parent to make the food safe, to offer foods in a safe feeding environment, and also to offer foods at regular mealtimes. We don't offer food all throughout the day. We don't want babies and toddlers and children grazing and eating at will.
Right.
Try to match your family's meal pattern when at all possible. And not all families eat 3 meals a day. And if that's not how your family eats, that's fine. But one other thing I'll kind of slip in there is that babies do not need snacks. And I think a lot of times, you know, I get so many questions about daycares and what do I do when my baby goes to daycare or goes to a school where they might be offering snacks all day long? And really take ownership of and ask about and be an advocate for your child having set meal times. I know that the Montessori approach is all about inclusion and observation and learning from each other. So it's not always so much a problem there, but sometimes we see these babies just getting pumped full of snacks or tons of infant milk way too close to mealtime. And then the working parents will come home, put them at the table and be like, oh my gosh, you know, my 10-month-old isn't eating dinner at 5 o'clock. I don't know why. Well, take a closer look. Are they getting milk too close to mealtime, too much milk, right, or are they having snacks? Because to be honest, the milk that you're offering in between meals, the infant milk up until age one and then cow's milk after age one, that's the snack that can tide your child over between meals. And babies do not need snacks.
That makes a lot of sense. One of the things that I learned in my Montessori training was about them, the importance of them noticing hunger cues and then also noticing, you know, when their belly's full and being conscious of it, right? So like you're kind of honoring that by offering the babies set meal times, you know?
Absolutely. And your 6 and 7 month old baby, they are not eating in response to hunger. They don't know how to eat in response to hunger. In our phase one of our baby led weaning program, we don't even change anything about the milk schedule or the nap schedule because the baby's not eating that much. And that's not the point. They need lots of time to learn how to eat. Mm-hmm. Your older baby, though, after you drop that first milk feed, when we move into phase two and your baby's starting to do combination foods and everything's kind of clicking, now you drop a milk feed. Now the older baby can start to learn, that feeling of hunger in my stomach, you know, that goes away when I pick up this solid thing called food and put it in my mouth. And that's really when weaning starts to just kind of take off because the child starts getting more nutrition from food and less nutrition from infant milk. And that's weaning in practice, right? We're moving towards that period at around the 1 year mark where baby can be getting most of their nutrition from food and a smaller amount from milk. But it takes time and it doesn't happen overnight. But you're right. It's just an extension of the responsive feeding methods that we teach in the first half of infancy, right? When your baby is breastfeeding or bottle feeding and they're full, you learn to look for your baby's fullness and hunger cues. When they cry, okay, when they cling to you a certain way, you know when they're hungry, and when they're full and they turn their head away from the breast or the bottle, they're telling you without words that they're full. Right. And they're going to be showing you similar cues when they start solid foods. So it's absolutely asinine that we strip away all of our baby's independence and autonomy when it comes to feeding because we started solid foods, right? Just because you can shove an arbitrary amount of pureed food down a 4, 5, or 6 month old baby's mouth, it doesn't mean we should, right? Our babies can learn to do this on their own. And it's just so fascinating to watch what they can do. And like you said, it saves you time, it saves you money, it saves you anxiety and stress. Mm-hmm. I see nothing except positive reasons to do this, as you can tell. I'm kind of passionate about this approach.
Absolutely. As you should be. It's incredible. You know, because we have a lot of new parents that are probably going to be starting solid soon or expectant parents who are just diving into the world, you know, would you mind just sharing some common mistakes that parents make in regards to starting solids?
I love that question because we're not mentioning these mistakes from a place to shame any parents, but when you work with so many families, like just like when I talk to my feeding therapist friends, I'm like, tell me what people are doing that makes them end up in feeding therapy so that I can help the families not do that. Like, right. Let's all learn from each other's mistakes. And so one of the biggest mistakes I see is that, I'll give you three, parents worrying about how much the baby is eating. If we could just remind ourselves, and I don't know if your audience is familiar with Ellen Satter and her division of responsibility in feeding theory. Ellen Satter is a dietitian, a licensed therapist, and her division of responsibility in feeding theory tells us that we have jobs as parents and the babies have jobs. We only have three jobs as parents in the feeding relationship. You're in charge of what the baby eats, you're in charge of where they eat, and you're in charge of when they eat. But the baby is ultimately in charge of how much or even whether they eat. And so to boil that down, what I tell parents is if you're feeling freaked out or stressed out that your baby's not eating enough, remind yourself, it's not my job to make my baby eat. It's the baby's job, and they need lots of time to learn how to eat. So number one, stressing about how much the baby is eating. Another thing that we see, and this is kind of like maybe a little nitpicky, but parents constantly wiping their children or cleaning them up while they're learning how to eat. Okay. How would you feel if you were trying to learn how to eat like a whole grain cereal and like you've never done this before and you've just learned how to sit up. Now you're trying to coordinate sucking and sitting and swallowing and breathing. And then this lady starts attacking you with her wet wipe or her washcloth, like wipe, just because you have a piece of food on the side of your mouth. Eating is a full sensory experience, and your baby touching that food and smashing that food and sniffing it and putting it in their hair, it's all part of that full sensory experience of learning how to eat. And I'm as type A as they come, but you have to let the child get messy. Now, I'm all for cleaning up the food mess the second that meal is done, but constantly wiping your baby during a mealtime can lead to negative associations with food and feeding, and eventually food aversions and then food refusal. So just get comfortable with the mess. You guys, changing diapers is gross and messy, but like we do it when we have to, okay? Cleaning up the baby-led weaning mess, it's disgusting, but do it after the meal so that your baby can experience that food, that they can experience that. So get comfortable with the mess and try not to wipe your baby during the meals. And then the third thing that we see parents doing is they go too slow. They take this unbased recommendation to wait 3 to 5 days between foods. And if I can do anything in my professional lifetime, it would be remove reference to the 3 to 5 day wait from all medical textbooks, from all doctor trainings, from all literature in the pediatrician's office, from every single bogus blog written by a mommy blogger has no business teaching infant feeding. There's absolutely no reason to wait 3 to 5 days between foods. And we're proving that. And now we're working with researchers to really drive home this idea of pushing, you know, 100 is a relatively arbitrary number. It's totally doable and it's nice and round and I like symmetry.
Yeah.
We've had families do, I mean, I just had a mom hit her baby hit. She's in Germany. Her name is Teresa. She's amazing. And she's like, I'm really into this and I like cooking. And her baby had tried 100 foods by the time they turned 8 months. Wow. And the mom was just like, I'm into this. Now, nobody says you have to do this, but on the opposite end of the spectrum, just giving your baby the same 3 to 5 purees all day, every day is certainly not going to be helping them achieve their developmental and nutrition milestones either.
Absolutely.
So don't wait 3 to 5 days. Offer your baby as many new foods as you can fit in. And if it doesn't work for you to do it on the weekdays, use the weekend to try new foods. We have lots of families who do that, and their babies are trying just as many foods as parents who stay at home.
Absolutely. From the developmental side too, at that point, their job is to learn about their new world, right? They're making connections about their new world and everything that's in it. And so if it's limited, that is what they will view. So going into toddlerhood where they seek higher levels of autonomy, right? They're going to be like, no, this is what I know. I know these things, you know? So it just is so wonderful that that's what's recommended.
It's developmentally appropriate. And honestly, there is no feeding milestone that says your baby needs to learn how to suck an applesauce puree out of a plastic pouch. Like, right. And again, I think pouches in moderation, if you're traveling as a convenience food, as a sometimes food, are perfectly fine. Do remind parents that putting anything in your baby's mouth, including a spoon, can be a choking hazard. So if you do pouches, we recommend squeezing them into the bowl. Then we use a baby-led weaning spoon and a technique called the preloaded spoon approach. That's a technique, the terms coined by Dawn Winkleman, who's been on your show previously, and she developed the award-winning tiny spoon from Easy Peasy. Easy Peasy mm-hmm. is the company that makes all of the feeding gear for baby-led weaning, and Dawn is their feeding expert. And this whole preloaded spoon approach is, yeah, you can do purees, because purees are an important texture for your baby to master. And some people mistakenly think baby-led weaning means skipping purees. It doesn't. But purees are not the only texture your baby can eat, and they can eat it themselves. And we do that using that preloaded spoon approach. But when a baby sucks a food out of a pouch, they're not smelling the food. They're not seeing the food. They're not tasting the food. They're not touching the food. And by the way, a lot of times that food has been altered so far away from what it originally started out with additives and preservatives and ingredients you can't pronounce. And it was packaged and processed and put in that pouch before your baby was even born. And you just dropped $3 or $4 on it. It really doesn't make sense. And it's certainly, again, not developmentally appropriate and not nutritionally complete. And yet parents are constantly being fed marketing messages that like, oh, after your baby starts solid foods, you just go to this other aisle in the grocery store and buy all this processed and packaged food. And again, that's really a construct that's only been around since the earlier part of the 20th century. So if we zoom out and we look at like, Babies can just eat real food, but we do have to modify them to make them safe. And that's the area that we really try to teach parents how to do that. Even if you can't cook, you can do this for your baby.
I feel like that perfectly aligns with Montessori too, because, you know, one of the things that I talk about a lot on the show is how the end goal is, you know, that they're an empowered member of their community, right? They're an included member of their family. And
yeah, so don't make them sit in a high chair by themselves on the other side of the kitchen. They can come right up to the table with the rest of your family if you have the right kind of high chair.
Exactly. Exactly. So where can our audience find you for more information? Where can they find your program and all of your info?
If you are interested in learning more about baby-led weaning, I teach a free 1-hour online video workshop every week called Baby-Led Weaning for Beginners. I'll walk you through the first 2 weeks of baby-led weaning, show you how to prep the foods. We talk about the allergenic foods, help you get over your fear of gagging if that's what freaks you out. And everybody on that free online training gets a copy of my 100 first foods list. Never want you guys to run out of ideas of foods your baby can eat. You can sign up for this week's workshop times if you go to fortifiedfam.com/Montessori. That's fortifiedfam.com/Montessori. Sign up for this week's workshop times. I also do a big Q&A at the end of that. So if you have any baby-led weaning burning questions left over, I make a point to answer every question there. And I hope to see you guys there. And hopefully your babies will eat 100 foods before they turn one as well.
Awesome. Thank you. So really, really quick before you go, would you mind just telling us what your favorite part, if you can pinpoint what your favorite part of the baby-led weaning process is?
Right now, because I'm working with these triplets and they're amazing. And it's like watching babies all do the thing that they were designed to do, but watching the look on the grandparents' faces. Like mm-hmm. We just had our intern, her niece was our kind of test baby. We try all our recipes on whoever has babies in our town. And this family and the mom, the grandmother came over. The grandmother only speaks Spanish. And I can understand enough Spanish to like definitely pick up that the grandma was not loving baby-led weaning the first week. Mm-hmm. And then when that baby had 100 foods, the grandma like... The mom sent me videos of the grandma just like fawning over this baby, like just watching the grandparents fall in love with this approach. And my own mom didn't like baby-led weaning when I started it. She's also a dietitian. She's uh-huh. like, I spoon-fed you and you turned out fine. And then like, I caught my mom one time like bragging, like, oh my gosh, I saw one of the quadruplets eating sardines and the other one was having beets. And it's like watching uh-huh. the grandparents fall in love with this. And then they like take credit for it. Like if you're getting any pushback from people in your community, like seeing really is believing. And when people say, oh, babies can't eat meat. And we have babies over every day eating soft shreddable strips of meat. Like I just love the look on other people's face when they doubted the baby's ability to do it. And it's like, hey, I'm not trying to convince you of anything. This baby is clearly showing you that they could do this. Like that's my absolute favorite part of this whole approach.
They are capable. We feel the same in Montessori.
Yeah. I want to ask your opinion, thoughts on the Montessori weaning table. I don't know if you've covered that topic in your podcast before.
Yeah, I really like the Montessori weaning table as far as what it provides. You know, when there's a walking child, they become very conscious very early as far as, you know, they can go crawl to the table or walk to the table. I've had kids in my class who have literally crawled to the table, pulled out their chair, signed to eat, sat down, you know, they become very conscious about it. There are also endless benefits though to the family table. At, you know, I have a trip trap chair at my table every dinner, every breakfast. My child's with us because there's so many benefits to the parent, you know, the observation of the parent, the community aspect.
And so, I agree with you. Like, I can see it working in the school setting, but I'm always also like, sorry, but like to be practical here, a 6-month-old baby doesn't crawl and they can't be safely restrained in that Montessori chair with their feet resting flat on a solid foot plate, which lowers the risk of choking. So like I'm pro the table in the school setting for the right age, but for our earlier years, I just don't really see a benefit to it. And I love to ask every Montessori parenting guide the same question just to like get your take on it.
Yeah. Yeah. We have specifically designed chairs for the 6-month-old because they sit in the diamond shape, you know, at that age. So there's a chair. It's like a square chair that pulls up to the table. But again, in the home setting, it's also economical to have.
Well, that's what I love about you mentioned the trip trap chair. I mean, these chairs, the trip trap was designed in 1972 by Peter Obsvik when he could not find, he's a noted Scandinavian furniture designer, and he couldn't find a high chair where he could pull his child up to the table with. So it was designed actually without a tray. The whole tray that they sell with it, that's an aftermarket thing because you want to pull that baby up to the table. And my school age kids still sit in their trip traps and we use them for homework. And that's a chair that grows with your child. And you only had to buy one chair. Like unless you like buying stuff for every stage of babies. And there's definitely parents out there like, oh, new stage, what do I get to buy? But like, sorry, I have seven kids. Like I do not want to buy stuff. I want to buy it once. And that trip trap that you have will stay with your child through to adolescence. I mean, those chairs hold up to 250 pounds. Like they're amazing.
And you can find them secondhand. That's
absolutely. And that's the beauty of that chair is that it has been around since the early 70s. Now, the other problem is because they hold up so well, I get all mine on Craigslist, like usually $90. Mm-hmm. I buy them for families all the time because they're expensive new, but you can find them used and they look as good as the day that they were made, but they hold their value and they never break. So they tend people like hold on to them, but you usually can find them on the used market. And that's a really great recommendation.
You know, it just makes a lot of sense to do what works in your environment. There are a lot of parents, you know, who will set up the Montessori space and the family space and have it all together. And that's wonderful. I just encourage whatever works for your space, whatever works for your baby, but as long as it's safe, right?
And I love the flexibility of the Montessori approach. Like the longer I've been specializing in the infant space and interacting with more Montessori schools and professionals and consulting, it's like there's no one size fits all approach. If this works for you, take what works for you. And that's the kind of the same thing with baby led weaning, with the exception of I really try to encourage parents just not to shove a spoon in your baby's mouth because they're very smart and they will become conditioned to just sit there and have you do it for them. But also if they don't enjoy it and then they have negative associations with food and feeding, it's kind of a slippery slope down into feeding therapy. And I want you to take the best parts of this away, that do the foods that work for your family, but also know that you can make almost any food safe for your baby. Well, thank you for covering the topic. I really appreciate it. And I hope it helped kind of shed some light on this approach for your listeners.
Yeah. Thank you so much for coming on our show, Katie. I would love to have you again one day. Thanks so much.
Sure. Thank you, Bianca.
So that was our interview with the amazing Katie Ferraro of the Baby Led Wean Team. I hope you guys enjoyed it as much as I enjoyed the conversation. As you guys know, I absolutely love the world of Montessori feeding. And so, you know, getting Katie on our show is such a joy and obviously incredibly informative. So I have all of her resources linked below. She has an incredible Instagram and podcast and website that has all the information you could possibly need for baby-led weaning. So, you know, whether you're about to start your solids, whether you're already on your solid food journey, there's always more to learn. So I will have all of her information linked below. And also, if this is your first time listening to our Montessori Babies show, I have a great free Montessori Babies masterclass on the 6 steps to begin Montessori with your baby that is also linked in the show notes. And that is about it. I want to send you guys just a giant, would it be virtual hug via podcast? But just know that we are all journeying with our babies together. We are in this together and you're doing great. And that is it for season 2, episode 15 of our Montessori Babies podcast. I will catch you guys in our next episode. Bye. Hey, it's Bianca, your baby tour guide here, hopping back in to say thank you again for listening to this episode of Montessori Babies. If you'd like to support your baby's earliest and most important years the Montessori way, I have a totally free masterclass that teaches the 6 essential steps to begin Montessori with your baby that gives you the exact, seldomly spoken about steps that I created after over a decade working with Montessori babies, families, and caregivers. You can register via the link in our show notes or in my bio on Instagram at Baby Tour Guide. Also, if you're enjoying my podcast, I would absolutely love if you'd leave a review to help other parents and caregivers find and join our community. Thanks again for listening to Montessori Babies, and I'll catch you in our next episode. Bye!